Hello everybody, my name is Anne Teato and welcome to the Psychic Matters podcast, episode number 32. If you are already subscribed to the show, thank you so much. That's really fantastic and I really appreciate you. If you're new to the Psychic Matters podcast, welcome to the community. Do make sure you subscribe to the show because I am here not only to teach you proven techniques for spiritual and psychic development from the comfort of your own home, but I'm also here to investigate the teachings of experts across the globe to bring you their wisdom, their advice, and their spiritual wealth. My guest this week is one of the world's foremost authorities on the modern interpretation of the tarot. So make yourself a hot drink, settle back in your chair, and tuck that blanket just a little closer around you. I really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you do, please consider leaving an honest written review on iTunes or Stitcher. I'd be so very grateful to you, and they really do help the podcast to move up the podcast charts. So, if you're ready, let's begin. I have a hugely talented and incredibly creative guest with me today in the Psychic Matters studio. I mean, where do I start? This lady is an author of over 41 different books. Three of her novels have won or been nominated for major awards in the science fiction and fantasy fields. And as well as being a science fiction author and comic book writer for the cult comic favorite Doom Patrol, she is also a world expert on divinatory tarot. She has created her own tarot deck, Shining Tribe Tarot. She has aided in the creation of the Vertigo Tarot deck, writing the accompanying book with illustrator Dave McKean and author Neil Gaiman. And she lectures at tarot seminars and symposiums across the world. If you are a tarot fan, you may well have read her famous book, 78 Degrees of Wisdom, which has just been released on Audible. I am so happy to introduce her to you today, Rachel Pollack. Welcome to Psychic Matters.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you for the wonderful introduction.
It's a pleasure. It's so good to have you here, Rachel.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
Your life stretches across so many different areas. You've done so many different things. I mean, your incredible writing, your tarot books, your poetry, your just the way that you look at life. I really don't know where to start. Where do you think is a good place to dive in?
We could start with how I became involved with tarot, I suppose.
Yeah, let's start there.
Okay, yeah. So I was teaching at a college in New York near the Canadian border. Very, very cold place. And it was so cold, you really didn't want to be outdoors at all, even during the daytime. And one of the other teachers didn't have a car, and, you know, it was just a 10-minute walk. She didn't want to have to walk. So she said she would read my tarot cards if I would give her a ride home. So I didn't know much about tarot. I knew it appeared in some of the literary things I had studied, in particular The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot, one of the great poems of the 20th century, and a little bit otherwise, not much. And she read my cards, and I was so struck by the cards, not by the reading. I don't remember anything of the reading. I just remember how wonderful the cards were. And it was like, it was the Rider deck, so there were scenes in every card. And what I remember was the Six of Swords, a famous picture of what looks to me always like a woman and a child in a boat, and the boat's being pushed through the water by a man standing up with his back to us. It's a punt that, you know, so the water must be very shallow, like a shallow river. You know, and so, but who is he? Who is the woman? Who are these people? And why are they carrying these swords in the boat? Where are they taking them? So it was just full of mystery. And actually, to me, oddly enough, it was like a comic book, but not a single sequential story. But each frame, each card was like a frame in a different story that you could weave together into a story. And that was the other thing I just loved so much about it, that it was not fixed. This is the thing that I kept back to all the time with tarot. And the thing that is so, to me, so essential about it, that it's not a fixed format. Every time you pick up the deck, it's different because you shuffle it. And I know in a lot of traditions, a lot of the occult traditions, they see it as a kind of compendium of knowledge, but that compendium often demands that everything be seen in the correct order. Which suit comes first and last, where the fool goes in the major arcana, first, last, next to last, etc. But to me, the essence of it is that it's not fixed. It's a deck of cards, or a pack of cards, as you say in English. I always like that expression, a pack of cards. And so you just, you can learn them forever, and then you mix them, it's all new again. And to me, that's such a wonderful, wonderful thing.
I love that. And I was reading 78 Degrees of Wisdom, and you talked about seeing each card almost like a picture and stepping into the card and exploring what goes on in that scene.
Mm. A lot of people have done that in exercises and classes. I've done that too sometimes. I haven't done it in a while, but often in classes I will have everyone like close their eyes and then kind of relax and see the card in front of them with their eyes closed and then see it get bigger. And so it's like a door or window, and then they step into it and then they find themselves inside that place. And then they see what they experience, and they come back. And so they've gone into the card and lived it for a moment. And this is the Lover's card from the Shining Tribe Tarot that I made.
Yeah.
And this came from one of those exercises that I did with myself. And so I took the Lover's card from the Rider deck, and I'll get that one too, because that's right here. So the picture that in the Shining Tribe deck, it shows basically a person and an angel in the sky embracing, and they're like the human's legs around the angel's legs, and the angel's wings around the upper body of the human, and there's like flashes of light coming all around them. So they're the lovers. This is the Lover's card from the Shining Tribe Tarot, and it's like a human and a spirit. And there's lots and lots of meaning for this, but this comes from one of those exercises. So the exercise concerned the Lover's card from the Rider deck, which is a very traditional deck that many of your listeners will know. So in that picture, it shows Adam and Eve being blessed by an angel. The angel's in the sky above them, and his arms are out blessing them. Adam and Eve are both naked, and they're down on the ground. So I went into that picture in that method, and I stepped inside. As soon as I went into the picture, I saw Adam and Eve were having a picnic. So they were still naked, but now they had a big wooden picnic table, and there was a big bowl of potato salad and a barbecue going, like an American picnic. And, oh, this is nice, I thought. This is great, you know? So I set off to join the picnic, and at that moment, the angel swooped down and grabbed me, lifted up me up in the arms for a passionate kiss. And that became the card in the Shining Tribe deck. What was so interesting, though, was there's a lot of debate in the tarot world about representation of gender and equality. A lot of people feel that the deck, because it's late Victorian, is very much biased towards kind of patriarchal kinds of images. You know, a lot of argument about this because you can see it in many ways. But, you know, I thought that, okay, I did not want to have the Lover's card just be a heterosexual couple, whether it's Adam and Eve or anyone else. So I had this whole ambitious idea of an avenue of couples. There's this avenue, and then either side is a singer, so there'd be two women, two men, a man and a woman, a human being and an animal, two animals, angels, whatever I could think of. You know, on the side, there'd be a group of people dancing in a circle, so it wouldn't simply just be couples. I was going to be really inclusive, right? I could never draw that. I mean, who could draw that gigantic scene, right?
Yeah.
But I had that meditation experience, the visualization. I realized after I drew it, I realized that the angel and the human being in my Lover's card are so entwined, you cannot tell if one or both of them is male or female. So everyone is therefore included, except for people who want to be in groups.
Yeah.
Can never include everybody. But that's an example of how, by taking a direct approach, going into the card and experiencing it directly, you open up the meaning of it without even thinking about that. If you try to plan things, it becomes too planned out. But if you allow yourself to experience it, then something wonderful can happen.
Is that how you created your Shining Tribe tarot deck?
Pretty much. Pretty much. I waited for images to come to me. I did not plan what they were going to be. Here and there, I had a concept. But often, I was inspired by something I'd seen, something I'd read about, like that one on meditation, and very traditional concepts from different cultures. I got to be the careful issue of, you can't just use somebody else's sacred image as if it's yours. So I was really careful to never have it exactly, if I did use something from a different culture, to never have it exactly right. You know, often it's quite fanciful, but if I did anything that was really directly inspired, I'd be careful to get something different. So I was not actually copying it, and always, of course, to give tribute to where it came from, and also to be very clear to say that I don't believe I am representing that culture in any way, because I'm not allowed to do that. But I am allowed, I think, to be inspired by things around the world that are exciting and thrilling.
And so just going back then to your early experiences with tarot, when you said you first had that reading that you can't remember, but you were very inspired by the imagery on the pack, how did you take it forward? So you just had that experience, and then what did you do from there?
Well, the first step was to get a deck, which at that time was very difficult. It's hard to imagine now, which there are millions of tarot decks flooding the world. You can go online now and you can find hundreds, if not thousands, of tarot decks for sale. It's phenomenal. It's wonderful. It's a great explosion of creativity. But back then, there was pretty much nothing. If you could find a little occult shop someplace, they would probably have maybe two or three different decks, and that was about it back then. So I had to look around. I didn't have any knowledge of that world. So I had to search around, and finally I found one. I think I found it in Montreal because I was up near Canada. And so I just had it, and I began looking at it again. I got a book, too. The books available then were by a woman, Eden Gray, who many of us now from that early period really revere. And I got to meet her at a tarot conference, which is such a great experience. It was in Chicago, and it was very early international experience, early 90s. And actually, it was a little later, it was late 90s. Anyway, and Eden was the guest of honor. She was 96 at the time. And it was so thrilling to meet her. It was really our hero for so many of us, you know. When she was introduced, like, the whole audience just leapt our feet in a huge, gigantic ovation for her. It's so many of us who were old-timers knew that she was the person who introduced us. So I started with that, you know. And the other thing I did immediately was do readings for people. Later, I would learn that some teachers say, well, you mustn't do a reading if you've memorized all the meanings. And I would go, what? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because my readings were so much freer because I'd put down the card, I'd look in the book, and then I would just see what I saw, you know. So I started doing readings for people. And my great story about that is I discovered all my friends were having affairs. Isn't that funny? It's wild. I say it was a cold place, you know. So what else was there to do in winter? But it was like, you know, like, I mean, really quite a few, you know, at least like three or four people I discovered. And they did readings for people, helping them with situations. But then I also did not just use the meanings in the book. I worked around the pictures. And one very early thing I did, which is really significant for me, was I had a friend come over. He was a poet. And, you know, I write fiction, so we were both connected to imaginative things, but also traditions. And so we just looked at the cards one by one and turned them over. And with each one, we talked about what we saw. And we started going beyond the picture and beyond the book description of what it meant and seeing different things. And that was a huge step for me to be able to realize that there were things in the picture that probably almost certainly were not intended. But sometimes they were. You never know, because Wade, the designer of this deck, was my original deck, and for many people was and still is. You know, he was very, very steeped in traditions, spiritual traditions, theological ones, Christian traditions. He was Catholic, you know, esoteric, secret orders, and so on and so on. And Pamela Smith, the artist, was an intuitive, a brilliant artist, and a lot of her stuff just was things that came to her. So who knows what was intentional, wasn't intentional, but some things really feel like they were not intentional, but they're there. The one I always remember, the one that really like triggered something for me was the Ten of Pentacles in the Rider deck. So it shows there's an archway, there's a family in the archway, a man and a woman. The man's not looking at the woman. The woman's kind of looking away, but holding onto his arm. And then the little child is not looking at either of them, holding onto his mother's skirt because he's frightened. And then there's outside the archway, there's an old man. He's got white hair. He's wearing a kind of robe of many colors, I like to call it. And he's very mysterious looking. And he's just outside the family archway. And the only ones who see him are the two dogs. None of the people notice he's there. And so at first it just struck me as very magical. But then I thought of Odysseus in the Odyssey. So when he comes home, he's disguised as an old beggar. And only his dog recognizes him. So this is like a big step. So then I saw that card as a moment in the Odyssey, which I'm guessing was not the intention. Yes. I don't know what Waite and Smith meant by their old man.
Yeah.
Who he was, but he's a wonderfully magical figure. So that was a step to me towards getting into the pictures in a way that was very much my own, but also very connected to what's on the card. Not something I'm taking from outside and pushing it on the card, but the card leads me to think of this other thing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful way to work. And I know you said that your cards are your source of wisdom and understanding. Mm-hmm. Can you say more about that?
Well, they lead you to, if you give yourself to them, they will open things up for you. The fact that, you know, vision of the lovers.
Yeah.
And then the realization that it transcends the issue of, you know, male and female or different groups, because you can't see exactly which human and the angel are. So there's things like that. It just opens things up for you. And also it just leads to awareness of traditional ideas and concepts because you start to learn about them. And you learn about things like Kabbalah, which is very intertwined with tarot. I'm Jewish, and I grew up in a fairly traditional but ordinary Jewish home, not ultra-Orthodox, anything like that. But, you know, my parents were Orthodox in their outlook. Like everything was kosher and things like that. I never heard the word Kabbalah, ever. Not alone that said, I never heard the word. I didn't know it existed until I got into tarot. And when I got into tarot, I saw this word in reference to Judaism. I started looking it up. I started reading books. That introduced me to Jewish mysticism, which is a wonderful, wonderful subject, and magic and so many things. So the tarot has led me to so many worlds that I didn't know about beforehand.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And what about memorizing the meanings of cards? I know you've spoken about that. Do you think it is important to have a knowledge of, some knowledge of the original meanings of the cards?
But you can do that just by looking in a book and use that as your taking off point, and not staying with that, not having that be the only meaning.
Yes.
So you start opening it up immediately. And, you know, I have a good friend, and I respect him a lot, but he has a very different approach to me in teaching. And he once said that he will not allow his students to do any reading until they've memorized all 156 meanings of the cards, 78 upright and 78 reversed. They have to memorize all of them before they can do any reading. So to me, that's just, personally, that's backwards.
Well,
to me,
the way
you get to know the readings, meanings is by doing readings.
That's right, because by the time you've learned all the meanings, you have to start again because you've forgotten the first ones you've learned.
Yeah. But you learn by doing.
Yes.
Know? So, you know, if you're doing it, and you just pick things up. Like people will tell you something, oh, that's wonderful. So, for example, the Seven of Swords in the Rider deck, it shows this man kind of sneaking away from a tent. And he's holding five swords and two are left behind because he couldn't carry them all. And he's like tiptoeing away, looking back and smirking. So it's like he's getting away with something, right? You know. So there's apparently a modern meaning of that, which getting back to the subject of affairs, which means someone's having an affair. And so once you know something like that, it starts to come. And when it comes in reading, it's because that person is in that situation.
Yes.
Obviously, not every time, but it's been amazing how many times that cards come up and there was no discussion at all. And I would say to someone, one time, I love the story, one time I was doing a reading for this woman and all her questions were very mundane, managing her time in the day, balancing work with her family, you know, budget, very ordinary kind of stuff. And that card came up, the Seven of Swords, in the near future, not now, but soon. And I thought, oh my God, I thought, her husband's going to have an affair. But no, it was not him, it's her. And so I said to her, are you thinking of having an affair? And she said, yes. And so that's it. So there you have it. So there's an idea about the card, a kind of official meaning, so to speak. And then you connect it to your own intuition, which is possible. No, not her, not her husband, her.
Yes.
And there was no reason to think that, you know? And yet, so that's how that works. And then because you had that experience, which is kind of unforgettable, that stays with you. You bring it to next future readings.
Yes. And then how would you, a lot of people ask, how you might get the cards to talk to each other. So if you've got three in a row or one next to another, how do they relate to each other or talk to each other?
Well, there's some wonderful ways. Robert Place is my partner in creating modern decks, and we've done other things together. So he's an artist. So for him, it's always a composition. He'll never read one card. He'll do three cards and say which direction they're looking at. They're looking at each other, looking away from each other. Is there a sense of past, present, future? For me, it's like, is there a center and two sides to it? They start talking to each other. But sometimes you have readings which have three positions, but those positions aren't connected, like past, present, future, for example. So the past leads to the present, and the present leads to the future, and the future is pulling you towards it from the past. So that's the ways in which they start connecting to each other in a kind of concept of a reading.
And do you think it's important, Rachel, to lay out the cards in certain spreads? What are your feelings on spreads?
Usually they're helpful. I'll sometimes do one card, but often I just will then do another one just to see as a balance. My favorite spread in terms of the one I most often do for myself is three cards. It was invented by my friend Zoe Matoff. Someone told her once that she found herself, if you Google Zoe's spread on the internet, you find it, which is really wonderful. So it's three cards, but not one, two, three. It's one in the middle, two on the left, three on the right. So one in the middle is what's going on. And on the left is don't do this, bad idea. On the right is do this, good idea. So it's also kind of radical. Because in modern tarot, there's a whole movement in the sense of we're giving things over to the person. We're not telling them what to do. The cards don't dictate to them. But here she's saying, you know, I want to know what would not be a good idea. I want to know what would be a good idea. It's important. So I do this bed if I'm in a quandary, if I'm having a difficulty, or just to see what's going on for the day. And sometimes it amazingly will, as I said, it will show me something I don't understand at all. I have no idea what it refers to. And then later on that day, all of a sudden something happened. Oh my God, that's that spread. And then I know what to do, how to not get in trouble.
It sounds like something people might like to try at home. So,
absolutely. Yeah.
So it's one card in the middle, and that represents you, does it? The card in the middle?
It represents the issue for you.
The issue for you.
Whatever's going on, the thing you have to pay attention to.
Okay, so we lay out
that. It can be you, but also it could be your situation.
Okay, great. You or your situation or what's going on. So that's the center card. And then you lay three cards to the left of that.
No, just one on the left, one on the right. That's it.
Excuse me. So one on the left and one on the right. I see.
And the one on the left is, don't do this, bad idea.
Okay.
The one on the right is, do this. This is what you need to do. This is good.
Okay.
And because it's in the moment, it's just for the day. I mean, it can be for a much bigger issue, obviously. You can. But I tend to think it's a short-term situation. I wouldn't use that reading only. I often use that reading at the end of a big reading. So the big reading, the Celtic cross of 10 places and maybe some other cards as well, that's going to look at lots of dimensions of the situation. It's going to reach into the past, this positions of past experience, reach into the future, feeling, influence of other people, lots and lots of things, right? But that's so big. At the end, I'll say, okay, let's look at right now. We're not going to look at this long-term thing right this moment. Here's what's going on. Don't do this, do that. So that just brings it into the immediate moment, which is very beneficial.
Yeah, I love that. That's really good. So, and what are your feelings, Rachel, on reversals?
You know, I always used to do them because that's what I learned. And I've since learned kind of the history of it.
Actually, before you go into that, maybe we ought to explain, because some people may not know what a reversed card is.
I apologize. Right. Okay. So let's say the card of the Fool. It's the card of someone standing on the edge of a cliff, kind of dancing attitude, looking very free and happy. You know? If it's reversed, if the card comes out, so it's just literally upside down. The picture is upside down on the table. That's all it means, is reversed. So you've shuffled the cards in such a way that that card and maybe some others are going to be turned over just the wrong way. So then you have to think, oh, what does it mean, the wrong way? And so the books would always tell you upright meanings, still do usually, upright meanings and reverse meanings. So for instance, the Fool, upright meanings, it's saying take a chance, be in the moment, be reckless, have complete faith, so whatever you do is going to work out fine, just act without thinking. Upside down is going to be careful, be cautious, being maybe too hesitant, maybe frightened, maybe afraid to take a step, and so on. So the upright meaning is usually the opposite of, I'm sorry, the reverse meaning is usually the opposite of the upright meaning. So I would follow that idea for years, that's what the books taught. And then when I made my own deck, The Shining Tribe, I realized that I don't want to do that, because when you do it that way and it comes out reverse or upside down, what you end up doing is an intellectual exercise. You say, okay, what does this card mean? And if I turn it around, what would that mean? Because you've gone away from the picture and you've gone into a concept of it and you're no longer looking at the picture. So now if I do a reading and a card comes up reverse, I'll sometimes, I'm doing it for someone else and they shuffle it in such a way, I'll sometimes say to somebody, when you look at this picture just like now, what catches your eye? And because it's a new picture. So they might say, oh, I'm caught by this person's foot. That's what I see is the foot. So you talk about that, you know, what that could mean. But also something else you could say is, let's say the Empress comes out and the Empress is reversed. The Empress is a card of passion and love of life. So you say, okay, well, what does it mean, you think, to reverse that idea of passion? How would that be different? And so we have a dialogue with the person and with the card. And sometimes I will, you know, there's wonderful meanings you can just draw on right away. And sometimes you have two reverse cards that are similar to each other, or the opposite, rather. So it's like each one is backing away towards the other. For example, the High Priestess and the Empress. The High Priestess is sitting in stillness and quiet, meditative, not speaking, sensing things very powerfully and deeply from within. And the Empress is very passionate and very outgoing and very full of action and love and dynamic. And so they're the opposites of each other, right? So if you reverse each of them, the High Priestess then becomes getting out from inside yourself, being more extroverted, being more passionate. The Empress becomes pulling away from passion, becoming more intellectual, more conscious, more aware of things, holding back. So it's like they're edging towards each other. So it's like the person can't do either one straightforward. Okay, I'm going to be the Empress, or I'm going to be the Empress. Instead, they have to keep backing away from one to the other. So that's something to think about. And And again, I think what's important is you don't say, this is you. You say, yeah, think about this. Is this, you know, is this something you do? Is this a way that you do this kind of thing?
And do you have a favorite card that you love when it comes up in a reading?
I think we all have favorites, but then we also find other cards become very wonderful in certain contexts. Like many people, I love the Fool because it's so free. I love the Star card because it's very open and healing. And also for me, I relate a lot of the cards to mythological beings. So the Star card is Persephone returning from the land of the dead, returning to the land of the living. There's all kinds of reasons for that, which I won't go into. But so that connects, that becomes a very meaningful thing for me also. Plus, it's my birth card. If you add up the numbers of your birth date, you always get a number. So my number adds up, becomes 17. So my birth card is 17, which is the star. So the star for that reason also. All kinds of things bring a favorite card. But often it's experience too, the things you've had. And one of the great things about reading tarot cards is to build on your readings for future readings. So you may discover something new in reading, but then that stays with you for future readings. So one time, Mary Kay Greer and I would teach together every year. This is a long time ago now. We were teaching, and our theme for the week was soul-making, as a term from psychologist James Hillman. I thought, well, let's ask the tarot about the soul. So I said, what is the soul? I was using my deck, and I got the Ace of Birds. Birds like swords, but instead of violence, they're music and beauty. So I got the Ace of Birds. And the Ace of Birds is an owl. The owl is staring at us. It's like looking directly at it. It's built the entire card, and it's looking at us very intently. So that gave a new meaning, that the Ace of Birds is the soul. When that card comes up now, it's an image of the soul. So it's saying it's, your soul is being invoked in that reading, and that becomes powerful you take to other readings.
That's absolutely beautiful. And I know you mentioned Mary Greer there, and I know the two of you, tarot divas of the world, as you are, have taught together at Omega for 40 years.
It's a little over 30. It's 30 years, yeah. This is very funny. So last summer, which was, I guess, no, it was two summers ago. It was last summer we couldn't go there. So it was 2019. And it happened to be our 30th anniversary. And it was also in July. And so it was the 50th anniversary of the moonwalk. So I got up in front of the class, introduced the weekend. There was five of us teaching. And I said, this is a very special occasion, I said. 30 years ago this week, Mary Greer and I taught our first tarot class here at Omega. So it's a very special anniversary. And people applauded, you know. And I said, and 50 years ago, two guys played golf on the moon. I said, two white guys played golf on the moon. That was fun. It took a lot of people to get it, that it was the moonwalk.
That's really good. Tarot conferences. I know that you have taught and you lecture at tarot conferences and tarot symposiums. Can you explain what they are? What happens at a tarot conference or a tarot symposium?
Well, one thing that's really wonderful, it's a sort of gathering of the tribes, because people come, some of them come from all over the world. When we have our make class, we get people from quite a few different countries, Australia, New Zealand, China, Japan, Korea, and places in Europe, places closer to home. And also, there's an event called the Reader Studio, and hopefully that will be happening again. I don't know if it will, because the pandemic again. And that they always get people. They actually have people, they ask how many countries people come from. It's really quite wonderful. So there's that. And you see old friends who you generally only see at these conferences. So it's a wonderful gathering of people, and people who've known each other for a long time. But then there's teaching, there's presentations. Omega, we begin now, the last few years, with a five-person panel called Masters of the Tarot, a kind of symposium. And then after that, there's 5 days of just me and Mary. And, you know, we're teaching. We're teaching exercises. We're teaching concepts and traditions and things like that. We try to make it very participatory. We try not to just lecture, but always have people doing things. And at the conferences, there's a mix of that. Some people give history lectures of tarot. Some people give techniques that you work on and maybe at your table, for example. So there's a lot going on. And sometimes there's several things at once. So you have to choose, which is sometimes difficult. But it's just, they're just terrific events. It's just so exciting to do. And it's so funny, you know, you arrive, you get into the hotel, right? So you arrive, let's say it's going to begin Friday night. So you're there Friday afternoon. And you know, it's second you walk in, who are the tarot people? Because the non-tarot people are dressed in business suits and proper clothing. The tarot people are just looking wild and...
Wild and free.
Yeah, wild and free. It's glorious, you know? Well, in some of these events, the readers always has a banquet on Saturday night in which they invite people to dress up as tarot cards. And so people come and all kinds of fun things, but there's always like, you know, two or three professional performers. And this one guy is so great, you know. And he came in like, you know, with huge wings and there's like this, you know, golden crown and like, you know, this gossamer trailing behind him. Phenomenal, you know. And he was like, he gets on stage and he says, some of you might know this, but I'm a drag queen. And go, really? No. Who would have guessed? He was delightful. He was so cute, you know. But also people just, whatever they can do, it's just so much fun, you know.
Gosh, and, it sounds incredible. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, there's banquets. It's a really great event. There's gatherings of breakfast and lunch.
Beautiful, really beautiful. And I don't know if I'm not allowed to mention this, but a little bird told me, Rachel, that you were commissioned to do the tarot deck for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show.
Yes, I know. It didn't happen. It was so great. So a group of us were working on it. You know, I suggested scenes from the show and themes and other people's ideas of what scenes they wanted to have in cards, you know. And some of the cards were so perfect. Like the Four Swords card, the Rider deck, shows this figure. Some people say it's a person, but Wade says it's a sarcophagus, a carving. But it's a knight lying on a kind of stone box. And so it's the exact image of Spike, Buffy's, you know, enemy, sometimes lover, when he's resting on his coffin in the daytime. Something was just perfect. And it was wonderful. The artist did this great work. At the very last moment, there was a contractual problem that no one really had anticipated, and it couldn't happen. We just couldn't do it. So it was really sad.
But that was 2 years of hard work.
Yeah, it was a lot of work. Yeah, I don't know if it was that much, but it was quite a lot of work. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Was everybody devastated?
We were all very disappointed. We, you know, what can you do? But we had accepted, but it was disappointing because it would have been so beautiful.
Yeah, it would have been beautiful. And talking about beautiful, the same little bird also told me that you create stunning pieces of jewelry.
Yes, yeah. It was my favorite thing to do. I love it. It's a hobby that's become a business because in order to finance doing it, I sell them at conferences. Well, what I do is I get sacred objects, pendants. So right now what I'm wearing is a caduceus of Hermes, the entwined snakes around the pole with the wings on top, which people mistakenly think is the medical profession, but it's not. It's the symbol of Hermes the magician. So that's a pendant. It's gold and silver. And I make a bead necklace to wear with it. So it's hanging from beads. And the beads are always some semi-precious and precious stones, no glass or plastic. And then there's little metal beads. So it comes out, it's very striking. And they're long usually. And it's my favorite thing to do almost. It's so wonderfully meditative. And actually, one thing about the pandemic that's been difficult for me is I've tried getting beads online, and it's not a good thing to do. You have to see them and feel them. And so I can't get to the bead stores in New York City because it's just not safe to do that.
Yeah, of course. You can't go out, can you?
You can go out, but you can't go to a big city like that.
Yeah, you can't go purchasing.
On public transportation, you know.
But you're so, I mean, with your tarot decks that you've created, your jewelry that you're making, and the incredible amount of books that you've written, you are just such a creative source. Where do you think that comes from?
Well, it's my life. It's what I do, what I love. One of the side effects, unfortunately, is you can't sleep very well. You know, the mind starts racing onto the next thing.
Yeah.
Then I have these ideas that I probably will never get to do because there's so many other things.
Yeah.
So I'm 75, and I'm still very active, happily. Obviously, I'm not going to have another 15 to 20 years to be doing more things. And yet, I certainly have probably 15 to 20 years worth of ideas I'd like to do.
And ideas novels, generate research. Ideas, of course.
Yeah, ideas generate ideas, exactly. Yeah.
And what about writing? Are you writing anything at the moment?
Oh, yes, several things. Too many things, it seems like. Because, again, it's hard to turn away things. My main project was that whole them on, like, finish up some other things, is a book called And On the Way I Told a Tale. And the subtitle is My Life in Tarot Storytelling and Magic. So it's kind of a memoir autobiography, very based on tarot and magic and the meaning of stories. So I'm very excited about that. And then lately I've been doing the books, these introductions for different decks. I've done several recently. I really like doing that. And so there's a couple coming up that people want me to do that. So that's coming up. I'm doing some work in comics, which I love doing. And that's a lot of fun. I'm in the middle of one of those things. And there's other projects I want to do. I'd like to take some of my old stories and do like special editions of them. you know, illustrated and beautifully produced to see if you'd be interested in that.
Stunning. And you've got some beautiful books written up on your website, because I was reading your lovely story, The Fool, the Stick and the Princess.
Yeah, that was a great thing to do. I forget how that started. I forget if it came up as an idea I had during a class, or it was somebody saying that, you know, they wanted to do some fairy tales, and I have a fairy tale, I came up with that. But basically, it's you know, it's based on the Fool card in the tarot. The idea of, in fairy tales, the fool is often the hero, in the sense of, like, you know, the three brothers. The two are clever, and the youngest one is a fool, and everyone thinks he's hopeless, and of course, he saves the day and everything. That's what that story's about, and it's just inspired by the Fool card.
And you've used elements from the tarot within that, haven't you? It's like a fairy tale.
It's all about the images from the cards.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. I just think it's very inspiring if people are listening and they want to go and have a look, because it's just very freeing the way that you've written it, and it just gives you a way of writing through imagery. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And, you know, and I will do stories in which I have no preconceived idea, and I put out some tarot cards and say, see what story they suggest. And in fact, Christine Matthews, I don't know if you know her work, or you should interview her sometime. She's an amazing person. But she and I edited a book called Tarot Tales, and we invited a bunch of tarot readers and writers to make up stories based upon tarot cards. And some of them did it the way we wanted, which is have no idea ahead of time. But some of them had the idea and they fit the tarot cards into, which is also good. Or they had a tarot card reader be the hero of the story.
Yeah.
But all the stories are one way or another connected to tarot cards.
But I think just the way you look at the world, you're creating stories all the time. Like you say, your mind doesn't rest. And I don't know if you can just, maybe one of the last things you can say is, how can people express their own creativity within? Because some people think, oh, I can't write. I have to write. I've been told off at school for my writing. Or I can't write because I don't know enough language, or I don't have enough of a lexicon. Yeah. How could people, like, just write? Have you got...
Well, you have to just start doing it. You know, as long as you tell yourself, I can't do this, you'll never do it.
Where can they get their inspiration from?
From things they read that they love, that inspire them, from things they see, life experiences. You know, they can think of something that happened to them or a family member, maybe some famous family story. That is an amazing story, that someone who traveled to another country and something happened. There's all kinds of things that will give you inspiration for what you want to write about. I have a theory that you could walk down any street, pick any person at random, and just start asking them about their life and the lives of their family and friends. And you will hear the most incredible stories, things that are mind-boggling, things that are just staggering. And I just, so if you look at that, there's always stuff you want to do. But also, if you like love fairy tales, if that's your favorite kind of stories, then just start thinking of one. The tarot can help you.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, that's lovely.
You pick a card at random, that's Six of Swords.
Yeah.
There are people in a boat. How'd they get in that boat? Where are they going?
Yes.
What's the island they're traveling to? So there's just many ways you can enter it. And just don't worry about whether it's good enough. Just start doing, because nobody's good enough when they first start. You have to learn. You have to teach yourself things. I remember my first novel that I finished, it never got published, and I felt I had to do it to learn what not to do. I really, you know, I could have read a book that told me this thing, but it didn't sink in. And so that was my learning. That was my practice. And then after that, things got better. So there's all kinds of ways. I used to teach writing at a college called Goddard College in Vermont. I taught it in a master's degree. So these were all people that had some experience, but still a lot of them, you know, they were really wanting to discover what they needed to do, what stories they wanted to tell. Often their stories would change in the 2 years they were there. One woman began by telling this kind of light-hearted, kind of almost satirical story about famous poets in the afterlife. And they all hang out in this bar together, and they're all jealous of each other. It was a very funny story. I liked it a lot. But it became something much, much deeper in the telling, because she was going through a personal family tragedy. So it ended up becoming about, you know, what does happen after we die, and what are our connections to the people we've lost. It was a very beautiful process to watch.
Yeah.
It also became very experimental, too. She's an incredible writer, that woman. And I could just see her just changing, growing in this class in the year we worked together. It was phenomenal.
Amazing.
This is so terrific to watch her do that.
Very inspiring. And talking of writing, your book, here it is, 78 Degrees of Wisdom, has just been released on Audible. How can people go and get a copy of that?
Well, then go to audible.com or Amazon. Audible is connected to Amazon, I believe, so Amazon will have it for sure. And you just look it up, 78 Degrees of Wisdom Audio or Audible, and it should be there.
And can you summarize what it contains for people who it's not
heard of it? 78 Degrees of Wisdom is my first book on tarot. My first tarot book and my first novel were published just about exactly the same time, the summer of 1980. The novel called Golden Vanity disappeared without a trace. I love it. I think it's a wonderful book. And my nephew, it's his favorite book. But most people don't know of it. 78 Degrees of Wisdom has been in print ever since, from 1980 on. So that's 40 years.
Congratulations. And that's amazing.
Yeah. Sold all over the world in many languages. And it's a book about, it's called The Book of Tarot. It's a book about the cards, what they mean. And I did that at that time. Part of what happened with that was I was teaching tarot, and I was teaching it in a way that I'd never seen in books. The books were of two sorts. One were basically fortune-telling books. And this card means this, and this is, you know, and so on. Eden Gray had very deeper levels, but on the surface, it was kind of a simple fortune-telling book. Other books were very occult, and they were kind of inaccessible to people who didn't already have some occult training. They made all sorts of references to various traditions that you had to know already. But what I wanted to do was do a book based on readings, but not based on readings of fixed ideas of what the card should mean. So really explore them and to give each card its due. So I did not have the same number of pages for each card, which even now is very radical. Most tarot books will make sure to have the exact same number of pages, or pretty much so. And, you know, one card might be 2.5 pages. Next card might be 8 pages. Because I just, whatever I saw and I learned about it, I just put down. Yes. And that's why I think people find it so helpful, because it really goes deeply into the pictures on many levels.
It's beautiful. And congratulations on it being in print for all of these years. That's such an achievement.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah, it's great.
Many different languages now, you know, because in Chinese and Korean, and I think there's a Japanese edition and European languages. Dutch, German.
That's amazing. Irish. It's just amazing. Yeah. And what's really great is that it's out on Audible, because not everybody's got a time these days, because we're all so busy, to sit down and read a book or pore over it. But to have that we can listen to while we're going about our daily lives is going to be an absolute joy for many, many people.
And I believe, so I don't have a copy because it just came out, but I believe that when you order a copy of it, you get it like downloaded, you know, to your whatever, how you listen to things, they will send you a printed or a PDF copy of the pictures. So you know which card we're talking about. You can look at it as you're hearing it being discussed.
Oh, that's lovely. And that's really good.
Because my way of doing it is so based on the picture. So it's really important that people be able to see the picture I'm talking about.
And Rachel, if people want to look up some of the beautiful stories that you've got written on your website or learn a little more about you, what is your URL for your website?
Well, it's just www.rachelpollack.com. It's way out of date, I warn people. Mm-hmm. So not everything is on there. Not all the books are on there. Some stuff that's on there is out of print. It's been a problem for some years now. It was created as a gift from a brilliant artist, except that way back then, there was a different language for programming. So it's hard to update. Anyway, but there's some wonderful stuff. Some of my artwork's on there from the Shining Tribe deck. People can see that, which is very nice. They can follow me on Facebook, which is just, my Facebook is just Rachel Pollack. I'm up to the limit almost on people to be friends, but they can just find me on it, and then they can follow me, and then they'll get all the things I put up.
That's wonderful. Rachel, it's been an absolute joy talking to you this evening. Thank you so much.
I also have a blog. It's also not up to date, but they go there. It's on richelpollack.wordpress.com. And there's quite a few things on there. So, I mean, even if I'm not keeping it up to date now, because I do most things on Facebook, new ideas.
Yes.
The blog still has a lot of information and a lot of, you know, things about tarot that people find exciting.
Wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. I honestly can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing all your knowledge with everybody today. And it's just lovely finding out about you as a person, your life, and your creative inspiration.
Well, thank you, Anne, so much. It's really, really enjoyed very much talking with you.
Thanks very much, Rachel.
Well, that was Rachel Pollack, world authority on the contemporary tarot, discussing her classic book, 78 Degrees of Wisdom, which has just been released on Audible. For those of you who are new to the Psychic Matters podcast, please know that we have a thriving Facebook page. So do go to Facebook and look us up. Everyone is welcome to join. all the show notes for this episode, including a complete transcript, plus resources and links for everything mentioned, can be found over on my website, www.anteato.com, A-N-N-T-H-E-A-T-O.com. So do head over there and pick those up. And you can take a quick look while you're there at the training courses I've got coming up. There is such a great one coming up on May 22nd, and it's called Gypsy Magic, the Divinatory Art of Scrying. Since time immemorial, our ancestors from every culture have used the ancient art of scrying to help them gain personal guidance, prophecy, or inspiration via imagery, symbols, and messages. Scrying is a type of divination which involves gazing at either a surface or a candle flame, sometimes smoke or clouds or any surface or object, in order to go beyond the physical eyes and allow us to receive visions and information using our intuition. During this workshop, I will teach you how to quieten your mind, connect to your life force energy, and use it to assist you in the fascinating art of crystal gazing. This workshop will help you develop and strengthen your own innate sixth sense or intuition, and you will learn techniques and methods that you can use to receive prophetic visions or symbolic guidance. If you fancy this workshop, head over to my website and sign up. It's on May 22nd from 3 to 8 p.m. UK time zone. Meanwhile, have a fantastic couple of weeks, everybody. Stay safe out there, and don't forget to go to Audible and download Rachel Pollack's book, 78 Degrees of Wisdom. Until next time, my name is Anne Teato, and thank you for listening to Psychic Matters.